You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA and will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
I'm Sue.
You're hired.
Let's go.
A perfect balance of 7 days each. The one and only thing not to forget. You are one. You can't escape from yourself.
There's been a slight misuse of the substance. I'm fine. Everything's fine.
You have to
cut through yourself! Old fat disgusting!
People are gonna love that.
Hello and welcome to the Periodic Table of Awesome. Would you like to stop? Would you like to stop now? Is now when you'd like to stop? It's up to you. You can stop any time. Hello, in fact, back. We had a break. We had a nice break. We had a nice week off.
Yes.
I'm happy if everyone else had a week off or some time out. That's all right. We had a little time out. That's fine.
But you came back. That's the main thing. Everybody came back, especially you, Jill. You came back.
I did come back.
Yes.
She came back different. She came back changed.
We certainly did. I had a lovely weekend, and now I'm back.
We're all a little changed after the viewing that we did, which we switched. Sorry that we had to switch around. Like, it's really funny. I think we collectively set some homework, and then a majority of us didn't do it.
The majority.
Jill did.
Being
no,
amazing.
100%. Like, Jill is A-okay.
The diplomatic ones did the homework.
Shitheads did not.
But it did give us an opportunity to talk about this film that we're reviewing today, which is The Substance, which was going to be rolled into the Halloween Hecate charcuterie later on in this month. But I'm really happy that it's not, because
honestly,
this is a good one to have a little bit of a dive into.
Does that make sense? Enough in there, and there's enough meaning in there, there's enough layers in there to make it really worthwhile for having a discussion about. And to those people in the chat who have actually seen it, who, you know, whether you caught it on a whim or whether you went out of your way to go and seek it out, congratulations. Well done.
Yep.
How are you feeling? How's your tummy? Are you ready to eat again yet?
Oh, I ate straight after the movie.
Oh, my God.
I don't think Jill stopped snacking during the movie. Delicious.
I had popcorn during this movie, and after a little while, I started to be like, it's salty. Oh, nah.
Wow.
But yeah, it is a very exciting and very unexpected film. Like, this is one of those times where I'm really happy to have been completely fucking blindsided by a film. You know, I hadn't really heard anything much about it other than a few people going, fucking surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I actually even knew about this movie until you guys had brought up The Substance as like being in the Halloween thing. And I'm like, what the fuck even is that? So then I found a trailer, I think. And then I thought, oh, yeah, that does look pretty good. And I think it's probably the most relatable movie I've watched in a very long time.
Yeah. Like, and I think that that's a really important thing to kind of talk about is that this is a movie that, you know, yes, it's filled with body horror. It's filled with gore. It's filled with all sorts of like ridiculous, horrific stuff. But probably some of the most horrific shit is just about what happens to women in the world after they hit a certain age.
Not even after they hit a certain age. It's kind of like...
Yeah.
Just at any point in our lives.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Just what happens to women in the world, full stop.
Keeps it nice one. Yeah. And I definitely am not going to speak to the female experience. I am just going to say, like, this one has, to me, is just like a nice bookend to Barbie. Like, Barbie and really The Substance, if you mesh them together, it's kind of like, this has a lot to say, and they're just saying it in different ways, but they're not talking about different things.
No.
And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and it's also definitely the dark Barbie.
Yeah. And I kind of had the more, like, squeamish, awkward laughter in The Substance. But I still had the same kind of awkward laughter in Barbie. It's just that everyone there knew that they were kind of having a joke. Whereas in this one, it's like, yeah, this is weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also absolutely knows what it's doing. And it knows that it is a proper Cronenberg Lynchian nightmare, but also hilarious nightmare. Sort of thing, because you cannot take it seriously by the end. Like, I think that's what it turns really well, is that it's absolutely 100% kind of dysmorphic horror up until a certain point, and then they just kind of, towards the end, they just kind of go, and ta-da, it is just a carousel of ridiculousness that I don't know. Did I say something wrong, Quinny? Do you have
No. Some of the shit just fell down on my table just off screen.
Great. Let me guess. It's going to be a Transformer. Just pick that up and show it to us because you have one there, right? It's just off screen. Fantastic.
Oh, technically, it wasn't a Transformer. That one was actually Skeletor. So there you go.
The diva. See?
Yeah. It's all about me.
Oh, dear. Speaking about magical properties of skeletonistic horror animals, what's The Substance of all about? Would you like some music?
Yeah, I love the music. Would please. Like some, I think the music makes it all the creepier.
Creepy shit that's going on. Yeah.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? You... only better in every way.
Seriously, you've got to try this new product. It's called The Substance. It changed my life.
It generates another you. A new, younger, more beautiful, more perfect you. And there's only one rule. You share time. 1 week for you, 1 week for the new you. 7 days each. A perfect balance. Easy, right? If you respect the balance, what could possibly go wrong?
Now, that's more the marketing pitch. Realistically, what the film's about, Elizabeth Sparkle, who is a renowned aerobics show instructor, faces a devastating blow on her 50th birthday as her boss fires her. Amid her distress, a laboratory offers her a substance which promises to transfer into an enhanced version of herself. There, that's an actual synopsis.
Sure. But how?
Well, you know how you're squeamish?
Yeah. It's a little step-by-step number that takes you through it.
Yeah, yeah. There's an excellent amount of logic bombing done by the creators of this film as to, like, if you were given the opportunity to have this weird thing happen, how would that happen? And you know, I kind of went flawless. That's great. Yeah. Nice bit of science in the fiction that kind of made it understandable and kind of interesting. And
but at the same time, it's so obviously like this is a fable, you know. It's the science is so kind of goofy that
I mean, you definitely have to suspend your disbelief with how it works, because how does a fully formed being come out of oneself?
It
shows you that right there. I mean, I'm not going to get into the like.
See, I mean, I thought it was going to be more of like a you mutate into this other person. I didn't think there would be two separate beings.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of the fun thing about it, though. And it's like it's one of those ways and stuff that I didn't really know what was going to happen going in. And they're talking about like, oh, it's body horror, it's shocking. And I was like, okay, how shocking could it be? And I do remember coming out of it going, okay, I really don't know which of the people in my friend group who have asked me questions about this I should recommend it to, because there's definitely some people there that I'm like, no. And then there's other people I'm like, yes, but with warnings. And then there's some people like, yeah, you're going to dig the fuck out of it. Like,
there's a part of me that wishes it wasn't so hardcore on the body horror, because I think this is such an important movie for people to watch.
Yeah.
But the fact that it is all based on body horror is probably the most realistic part, because for me watching this movie, I entirely understood every motivation 100%, because I pretty much think that I do suffer from body dysmorphia, even though this is undiagnosed. It's just something that I have, through trauma, grown up with and have to deal with in day-to-day life. But everything that happened to Elizabeth and to Sue in terms of, like, the mutations and the thought processes and the existential crisis and everything that kind of happened to them, either mentally or physically, is something that I completely 100% understood.
Mm.
And not at any point did I think that it was hard to believe.
No. Certainly the motivations, I think anyone could understand, especially any woman, because, and I am constantly thrown back to that speech at the end of Barbie, you know, America Ferrera's speech about, you know, you've got to be this, but not too much this. You've got to be pretty, but not too pretty, because then you're up yourself. You know, you've got to be available, but at the same time aloof. All of those things. And in this one, it's like, okay, you have to be beautiful. You have to be incredibly fit. You have to be the thing that has been keeping a network, you know, and a whole bunch of people employed for 20 years or whatever. But also, you've got to just go quietly. You know, don't make a fuss. Just go, because you're now not what we want.
Yeah.
And by we, it's not that. Like, I mean, you know, this is really a great sort of signature piece for Demi Moore. I think she's done an amazing job. She's
fucking amazing.
Better than ever.
Quite a meta through line for her as well, because she has gone through plastic surgery and been criticized for the way that she looks afterwards, that she doesn't look like herself anymore.
Yep.
But, you know, as a 61-year-old woman, she's incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
And so well kept.
Like, she
and it's yeah. it's a shame that people cast these kinds of expectations on people just because you're in the certain spotlight or you are accessible to nearly everybody, that you have to look a certain way or keep yourself to a certain standard. Like, there is a such thing as aging gracefully, and you don't have to conform to standards all the time.
I think they really lucked out with finding her as an actor who has gone through what you were talking about, Jill, like had to suffer all of that kind of stuff, because, you know, was in the mid 90s when she shaved her head and did G.I. Jane and just got raked across for that idea. And then, you know, later it comes out like, oh no, everyone wants to be strong and healthy and lift weights and get more muscular. And it's just kind of like, man, no wonder she's frustrated. No wonder she kind of did this as a project of like, fuck everyone. Like, I've lived this. I can do it. I know exactly how this character feels and why, and that adds the motivation to the rest of it. Because, I mean, I think that's the whole thing throughout the whole stuff. I was just like, my sympathetic character is Elizabeth Sparkles. It's like, you poor person. I understand why all of this horrible stuff is happening and why you did what you were doing and why you thought you had to do it. It's completely sympathetic. And that leads it right up to that finale, which I won't go into for people who haven't seen it, because I don't really want to spoil it because it's quite funny. But I mean, it's still really a sympathetic moment. Like, it's totally bonkers, but it's sympathetic.
Yeah. Mm. A little bit of Schadenfreude too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Things that I found fascinating about it was I mean, there's a lot of, it's all about flesh. Like the movie is all about like the vision of flesh. It's about the male gaze, but what I found fascinating is that it was the male gaze as seen through a female director's lens. I was watching these women and the way that they are shot, the way that they're lit, the way that they, you know, are either airbrushed or sprayed to make them seem dewy or whatever. I was aware that I was constantly seeing things the way that men have shot things forever in a day. And, you know, the focus is on certain parts of bodies, but not on people. And it was wonderfully uncomfortable to know that I'm being played by a director. Like, it's like, hey, you're using all of these tools that male directors have used to titillate people for all these times, and you're using it to make me uncomfortable. Oh, well done. Well fucking done.
But did you also notice that all of the men in this movie were portrayed through a vile lens of perhaps the female perspective?
A little bit.
I mean,
any time
much...
you came across a man in this movie, he was either leering and pervy, or he was being revolting and disgusting, like physically. The way that poor old Dennis Quaid was chomping on that shrimp with all of the sauce and everything, that viscerally, that was absolutely disgusting. And it was just such a good metaphor for like how we deem that kind of lecherous behavior.
Mm.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, there's absolutely nothing that I can add to that apart from going, I want to bring it back to Barbie again, is I feel like Will Ferrell's character as the executive and Dennis Quaid's character are just two sides of the same coin. Like, bumbling idiot and absolute predatory succubus kind of... Mm-hmm. thing that is there.
I especially really enjoyed the next door neighbor who his attitude shift was so disgustingly obvious that when he was thinking he was about to confront Elizabeth about a problem, he was like, hey, shut the fuck up, bang on the door, being aggressive because he didn't see her as anything other than a problem. The moment that Sue opens the door. So Elizabeth is the original. Sue is the young, the new hotness, if you will. But they're the same personality inside the body. Sort of. They're kind of not, but they kind of are. And the moment that the neighbor comes and opens the door and sees Sue, suddenly he's a different person. He's a complete fawning dipshit. Who is all about, hey, do you want to die? I mean, hey, I'm just a cool guy. We should hang out sometime. And it's fucking revolting. Like, as you say, every male character is a different version of what was gross about different dudes, including the beautiful young boyfriend guy, of which there are a couple, if memory serves.
There's the biker. He's the boyfriend-ish.
Oh, no, it was just him a couple of times, wasn't it? Is that right, Jill?
I don't remember.
Oh, no, there was two. There was that boy, that biker guy, and then later she has a boyfriend who was staying with her after she had descended into youth forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't remember. But, you know, even them, you know, they're fairly minor characters, but they're not portrayed in any way in a likable sense. They're kind of dicks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting, there's a little bit of discussion going on in the chat about what that kind of male perception is. And I also love that it's just not part of the main story, because the story is still singularly focused on Elizabeth Sparkle's character's response to the world, not
yes, yeah.
being forced into anything. It's just kind of going, this is what's happening, and do I want... And it's the internal struggle, which I thought was really interesting and empowering to watch, as why it's creating a sympathetic character, because, you know, it's the whole thing isn't because she's forced into something. The whole thing is because she knows that she wants to keep engaging with stuff that's terrible, but she still gives, like, there's opportunities for her to leave that situation, and she still goes, no, I want to stay in that situation. I just want to be this. And yeah, then it just gets very complicated. The meta narrative is amazing, and I still got a lot out of it.
There was a little bit of discussion in the chat about how, like, the men, that even though they are portrayed as disgusting and lecherous and all that kind of stuff, they're never rapey. I would like to kindly disagree with that statement, because unfortunately for women, the threat is real at all times. It doesn't matter whether somebody is being nice to you or not. And I think even just the suggestion of the men wanting something more, and like sexually, there is an implicit implication there that, you know, it could turn into a different kind of situation.
Yeah.
Just want to put that out there, that at no point is safety guaranteed in any kind of situation like that.
Yeah. And that neighbor character was definitely one that I thought of that with.
Extremely, you know, predatorial. Like, there may have never been like a lick of threat of violence, but that doesn't mean that the possibility wasn't there. And there definitely were red flags for me.
Oh, God, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed it was unnerving to always know that with the Dennis Quaid character, you're waiting for him to do something of that nature, because that was the way, but it never came through like obviously. And that was just as terrifying. Like, this is the thing. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, Sue in nearly every stance is portrayed by herself in a room full of men. And for me, that is objectively terrifying, that, you know, she can put herself into a situation like that that could escalate at any point. Like, you just don't know.
Yeah.
And like, it's very definite. You can tell that the way the men are thinking and feeling about her, that, you know, the situation could change. And I mean, grooming is also a form of non-consensual escalation of molestation and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
There's also the thing that, like, when they call her to the office, they make sure that she's come in your outfit.
She always has to come in her leotard. She's not allowed to go and put a robe on. She's not allowed to go and get changed. Like, these are all red flags.
Yeah, absolutely. What I found fascinating, like, the body horror aspect of it was one thing, you know, where you're dealing with injections and you're dealing with, you know, sewing up of flesh and all that kind of stuff. But what I found fascinating was the exploration of the visuals of femininity. That you've got the visuals of Elizabeth, who is, from what I can sort of say, like, a very well fit but normal body. You know, she's somebody who has aged, you know, well, but not, you know, ridiculously.
Care of herself, and she's beautiful, and there's absolutely nothing.
There's nothing wrong with it, but she
Sparkle is a 50-year-old woman.
Yeah, played by a 62-year-old. And then you've got Sue, which is the absolute, you know, perfection version of feminine looks and everything, you know. And they don't shy away from, like, the looking at that body in all of its different things, naked, whatever. But the things I found the most interesting were in the second half of the film, where they started to explore the different visions of femininity through the image of the hag and the crone and the witch. The concept of like the traditional maiden, mother and crone of the witchcraft imagery, mm-hmm. that I was like, oh shit, we're really fucking opening up a can of thought here, which is suddenly Elizabeth becomes a different type of vision. You know, the hair changes, the body changes, and she goes from being, you know, normal to suddenly wizened, or, you know, all of these, you know, things that are considered horrific. And I was like, oh, fuck, okay, interesting. And then suddenly there's food everywhere, and it's like...
It's also a reflection of the inner self. There's a moment during the movie where she wants to meet up with somebody that she knew from high school. Oh, and she's getting dressed painful. Up to go out. And she's about to leave, and then she sees a picture of Sue. And she's like, I'm going to change my lipstick. It goes back to the bathroom and cannot bring herself to leave the bathroom because she's not happy with the way she looks. And I'll tell you, I've fucking been there. And to that moment is like her reflection is that crone figure. Like you're just completely and utterly at odds with what you're seeing and what you're feeling. And I think that it was a very powerful like analogy for, you know, the internal feelings that Elizabeth was probably going through, even though like we are seeing a beautiful woman and she's probably seeing the crone.
And also that it's split at one point where half of her is you know, suddenly got gray hair and you know, starting to get the arthritic fingers and so forth, but then the other half of the body is relatively unchanged. And then as it goes further and further, the pain and the, and also, God, the pain of movement. Holy shit, did I feel that in my fucking bones? Like, you know, having to work yourself up to straightening your knee out because you know it's going to crack and hurt like fuck before you stand up. It's like, oh, God. There's, yeah.
So, this movie is really great. It has a lot of substance to the substance. Not a pun. Randomly, that wasn't a pun. Because it plays on a lot of, like, expectations of what you expect of the film, and also it plays on the expectations of the people in the film. I like the fact that, you know, technically speaking, you become split when you take the substance, and you basically become a young, hot version and then the regular version that keeps going. What's great is that they go to great lengths to explain that you don't actually control, you don't have control over each other, and you may not necessarily feel the same way as you do, because that's not how it works. You don't share memories. You don't sort of download yourself into each one. So it really showed that great expectation problem between getting frustrated with the, like the young self frustrated with the old self, and the old self getting frustrated with the young self. And so even during all of that, you're kind of going, oh, I get this now. And it was like a generational, another layer to the film that you're like, I didn't think of that. Or why does this happen? Or why does that happen? Like, is youth an idiot? Yes. but can age also be an idiot? Yes. I really like it. And it's all wrapped up in fucking Cronenbergian horror. It's like watching The Thing.
There's so many layers to that problem of the old self and the young self and the splitting and trying to get along and that kind of thing. Because in like a dysmorphic brain, like there'll be days where you do see that young self and you are feeling yourself and you're like, oh my God, I'm great. I feel amazing. Yeah, I look fantastic. Oh, my hair's doing great today. You know, all that kind of stuff. And then you have the days where you're like, oh my God, I'm hideous. I can't leave the house. Nothing's going right. I can't, you know, it ain't working for me today. So that the two being apart, I just understand it so well. It's like what do you do when your young self is out there and having an amazing time? You want to be the young self at all times. You want to be the young hot one to go and meet up with your friends, to go and like have an amazing life. So when Elizabeth is stuck at home as herself for that week, what do?
Watch TV and eat chicken, you know?
Yeah. The visual representation of depression around body dysmorphia was like so incredibly intense. Yeah, I can't believe somebody nailed this movie so perfectly.
The thing I really like about it is that it's obviously speaking to a female audience, like it, and in a really powerful way, in an emotional way. But I also like that it is accessible enough that anyone's going to be able to watch it and understand it. Maybe not on the same level.
Yeah.
Maybe not, you know, really to the fucking bone, but hopefully a group of people, group of dudes, whatever, could watch that and go, oh yeah, right. Okay. I kind of have the first inkling of how shit that must feel, and the desire to just not be yourself. Like, I love the idea of, you know, people made the joke for years about, oh, look, past me did that, you know, thanks past me, or, oh, good old me from last Friday night left a chocolate bar in the drawer and I just found it now, thanks past me. Now, this is the question, what if you could talk to past me, and what if past me was sometimes a bit of a cunt to you?
Oh, I hate past me. Never does any of the work that he's supposed to do. Leaves it for me to do in the future.
Past me should have gone to the gym a lot fucking more. Yeah. Past me probably should have had a better relationship with food. And now old me is going, my knees hurt. And, okay, here's a question for you. Yes. Would you take the substance?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that in my life already I have contemplated something like this without even knowing it, so...
Yeah. So that's a possibility.
The answer is probably yes.
I'm taking it right now.
Hang on, which one are you?
Well,
turns out this is the younger, hotter Dion.
Oh God. Speaking of younger and hotter, interesting trivia that I had like discovered about the film is a lot of this is practical. So. Yeah. I was really excited by like that going, oh my God, there is some horrific stuff in life. Like the actual birthing scene is 100% practical. Ooh. Using body doubles, except for the duplicate eye, they couldn't do that. But like, well, I mean, like, yeah. Holy shit, they did a lot of heavy work, and there was so much prosthetic work in that. I really want to shout out to that creative team that got in there and did it. One thing that I didn't know till I just like read the information about it is that Margaret Qualley, who's the young
Sue,
who is the daughter of Madeleine Stowe.
Andy McDowell.
Oh, same fuck, really?
Thing. See, that's just perfect example of why this film should be resonating with me more, and I should
exactly the same.
Pay more attention. Exactly. You're right, Jill. 100% right. But she had
interchangeable.
She had prosthetic.
Yes, that's right, Peter. You are all interchangeable. Oh.
Oh, death.
Love you, Jill.
Her breasts in this is a fake rack.
Oh, really?
Yes. Like, this is what I'm saying.
God, now I feel a little bit better about myself.
Yeah, she's like...
Is that fake ass too?
Yeah, no, Margaret Qualley is just like...
Or
oh,
is that her real butt?
I had the rack of a lifetime. It just wasn't my rack.
Wow.
So there you go. It's really interesting that even though you're looking at it and you're like, oh, stylized, they found some ingenue to do it. It's like, oh, no, they totally made her the ideal and shot her that way. It's 100% worked on and, you know.
Okay, that's fucking impressive because that then...
They should put that at the start of the movie as a disclaimer.
None of this is real. It's okay.
And I really like the quote that they said for, how do I say it? The Alyssa Sue. I don't want to ruin what that's all about. But they, what do they call it? A Picasso of male expectations. And I was like, that's from the designers. Perfect. And I was like, that's great. That's exactly what it is.
Perfect.
Yeah, like, so there's a bunch of people who worked on the makeup, Olivia Alfonso, and my favorite name, Bryony Rumble, a couple of the two, like, there's 30, 40-odd people who worked just on the special effects makeup alone, and you can tell, this is right up there. When people said, oh, it's, you know, it's got more in common with The Fly than it does with anything else, I was like, no. And then I watched it and went, yes.
Yeah.
It's Cronenberg. It's Screaming Mad George. It's fucking, it's blood and guts and gore. But at the same time, it's got so much to say.
Exactly.
I was sitting in an audience.
Levels.
Oh, so many levels. I sit in an audience and I was, at different times, horrified, cowed, occasionally feeling really embarrassed, and then towards the end of the film, laughing like a fucking loon, because at a certain point, you realize that it's hit a level of ridiculous that is like, oh, thank God, because like the horror has gone so far that it's almost actually letting you off the hook. Yeah. Whereas the rest of the film says, no, fucking stay with me. Look into my eyes and understand what this pain is. And I think it's ballsy. No, it's not ballsy as fuck. It's whatever. It's ovary as fuck.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm looking at all of the chats now that are like, oh, okay, there's things about it that they are like, hell no, I'm not going to watch that. Things like needles in spines.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is what I say. It's a caveat is to make the discerning argument about who would be up for it depending on the thing. I mean, you know, there's needles, there's teeth like falling out stuff. Like there's a lot of those traditional body horror tropes of, you know, broken bones, broken fingers, you know, things that are moving that shouldn't move, like all that kind of stuff. It's in there.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Q, talking about how like it refuses to let you off the hook for most of the film. But by the end of it, it just creates a scenario that understands it isn't this ridiculous. And I think that's kind of one of its wins, is that just at the end it goes, isn't this entire thing that we've been talking about so ridiculous because it's just full of stupid ideology instead of focusing on like people are great, you know, everyone is really fine how they are and you aren't what the expectations of other people are, which is so much more than you're expecting from a body horror film. Like, you know, it's like kind of like, oh, we're going to go see this. It's all going to be like, oh, fun. And so, like, oh no, no, this is going to teach you a lesson. You're going to be entertained and have a lesson.
I also remember the other touch point. Sorry, I know you're going to say something, Jill. The other touch point, the Fly, but also The Thing. So if you're looking for a kind of a guiding light as to where this kind of film's at, think of those films.
It's
mixed with Barbie.
It's Mary Shelley for a new generation.
Mm.
Yep.
Right. Right. Should we look at a clip and then a rating?
We're going to do a clip and then a rating.
I don't know. Either or. I don't care. Whichever way. We can just do whatever we want.
Well, it's up to you. Do you want to watch an ad for The Substance? Do you want to know how it works? Do you want to see what goes on? Or do you want to watch like Demi Moore's fucking great breakdown in a doctor's office?
Ooh. Watch the ad for The Substance because the other one's too hard.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, we'll watch an ad for The Substance. You can find the other one out there as a clip, but whatever. Let's watch an ad. What is The Substance and how does it work?
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger. More beautiful. More perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA, starting a new cellular division that will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
Sorry, we completely forgot about what was going on there. Got involved in a heavy discussion about, so if I was commercial on The Substance, old me would be dead, young me would have killed me.
Yeah, I just said to the guys, I said, look, if I did take The Substance, that younger cunty version of me would have me drained on the first day. I would not even make the first swap, like, honestly.
I'm just imagining the younger version of you on the phone going, so there's been a bit of a problem. Can I start draining other people?
Yeah. Is that oh, Jesus, that'd be funny.
Yeah. This is one of those ones that I am absolutely convinced I do not want a sequel to.
Oh, my God, can we please stop sequeling everything? Not everything has to be sequeled.
Hey, the joke about that just went through in the ticker.
Oh, sorry.
You just reading the ticker and getting content for this show. What the fuck, Quinny?
Who wrote the ticker?
Yeah.
Not me.
I did.
Yeah.
I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be drained by someone.
Oh.
Anyway, what did you rate it? I'm going to go 90. It was great. I love the substance. Highly recommend it, with caveats.
I am going to go 95. If you guys can stomach a bit of body horror, please watch this movie.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Jill. Like, I thought it was fucking amazing. Like, music-wise, visuals.
Yeah, the music, the cinematography, like, the direction, like, every fucking thing, like, the production, the sets, like, incredible movie.
Yeah.
Are you going to go get yourself one of those yellow coats?
Oh, man.
Walk around
that's, in. Look, there's a few unbelievable things in this film. One was that it snowed in LA.
Yeah.
Two, that a woman of Hollywood only has one coat. And three, that she has to wear a coat in LA.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's because it was snowing that one time.
That's like a freak of nature kind of every 50 years kind of thing.
I feel like it's that kind of alternate reality LA. Is it real? It can't be real. And that's probably why. It's like, oh, it snowed in LA. And people are like, well, this is in LA.
Yeah. And that's why I said it's a fable. And I like that because the structure of it and everything is almost like a fairy tale kind of thing. It's like, okay, here's your devil's bargain.
Yeah.
Here are the rules that you have to follow. Here is the joy and everything and the princess that you get to be. Like, by the end of it, she's actually a fucking princess.
It's like, what if one of those fucked up Germans wrote an Aesop fable?
Yeah. It's if the human centipede wrote an Aesop's fable. Wow.
Jesus.
Put that on the poster.
Straight to the pool room with that comment.
Thank you, Predakanga, who has seen it and enjoyed it an amount. That is amazing. Those ratings, of course, go onto the website and they all impact on the score that we give. We love it when we hear your thoughts on these things, and we appreciate it.
Yes, we do. It's very nice. And we'd like to be able to be collaborative.
Yes. Yes, indeed we do. If ever you have things that you want to say, you can send us emails, you can send us voicemails, you can do whatever. Like voice notes. They're called voice notes now, aren't they? I don't know.
Yeah. Pretty sure if you send me a carrier pigeon, I won't be reading it.
Oh.
Yeah, so not that way.
Oh.
No. What else did we do recently, or what were we going to talk about?
What have you been doing, Jill?
Oh.
I went to PAX on the weekend.
PAX,
woo!
To one of the days. It was okay. A lot of the same stuff inside. It's a little disappointing. A lot of some of the indie games have not even been developed yet. There's still pimping them out.
Yeah, right.
A few of the same ones again. Not a lot of big developers there. No Xbox, no Sony. Mm. I don't think Nintendo was there.
No big game announcers or anything, was there?
No.
Well, Nintendo did their own expo here in Sydney a few months ago. And
that probably explains it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just did a quick lap and hung out with some friends. I saw a wedding. They were doing weddings at PAX. If anybody has heard of an Aussie game called Cult of the Lamb, they had a life-size church built there with a celebrant, and they were performing actual weddings, like legally standing weddings. It was great because they had all of the guests there dressed in the cult robes, and the mascot of the lamb character was there, and it was great. Very cute.
I asked Tari. The question. Hey, Tari.
Sorry, I didn't get to say goodbye to you on Sunday, Tari, but hope you had a good time at PAX.
Nice. Should I play Cult of the Lamb? Because I know a lot.
Yes, I love that game so much. And a friend was telling me that there's a DLC now where there's a goat that now, like, it's a co-op, so like you can run the cult together with a goat, and there's more little characters to join your cult, like different little animals and stuff. So yeah, I'm looking forward to playing the DLC now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so they're always updating it.
Right.
Colony management and Zelda-style dungeon crawling. Okay.
Yes, that is a very good way to describe it.
Except you have to become cult leader.
That's your biggest aspiration, Dion.
I was going to say, Dion, this is... They made a game for you. The only thing is you have to be a lamb.
Well, you know, Lamb of God, I'm God. Makes sense.
It's very, very
excellent. Oh, you can be an evil mastermind and sacrifice your followers to gain ultimate power.
Oh, yeah, you can play it like a number of different ways. You can be like a very loving cult leader. You can be a ruthless cult leader. Like, yeah, depends on how you want to play it.
Excellent.
Yeah. The music's really cute too.
Fantastic. It's been the talk of PAXs for the past couple of years at least.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I've just never got around to playing it. So I will. I would. Is it on Steam and everything like that, or would
I? It's
be...
on Steam. I play it on Switch.
It's on. Okay, it's on. It's on. It's on every single platform imaginable, Quinny.
Nice.
Yes, Adsky. The wedding I saw on Sunday morning was a couple of furries.
Hey,
takes all sorts. But apparently, everybody. A few of the couples that were getting married at PAX had met at previous PAXes. So it was quite a romantic thing to get married at PAX, I guess.
Nice. Yeah. Also, yeah, getting married by a cult group is definitely something you could have on that. Like, I mean, one question that I have about this marriage in particular was like, were there family there? Were the family of these people there though?
Like, I think so.
Walking them down the aisle and stuff?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're going to be surrounded by people...
Yeah, they did, like, the whole procession, yeah. Like...
If you're going to be surrounded by people that you, like, want to be there and are genuinely happy for you, I think a room full of nerds is genuinely going to be happy for you doing that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, it was very hard to get a good seat. And, yeah. Like, where it was stationed, it was on the ground floor and there was, like, a mezzanine above it. And so we're like, oh, let's go up to the second floor. I'm sure we can look over it. Everybody had the same idea. Yeah. It was very hard to get a good view.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's nice.
And oh, that's awesome.
Good for everyone who went to PAX.
Yeah.
Yes, to everybody who had, I'm glad you had a great time. I'm not going to lie, I had a bit of FOMO on that one. I was looking at it going, oh, fuck, I miss going to PAX. Yeah, the last couple of years have not been a possibility. So next year, I think I'm going to make the point of just going, fuck it, and go as a punter and actually go to enjoy myself.
We all had a bit of a good excuse for a couple of years of missing PAX.
Well, that's okay.
Just remember.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Don't feel too bad. You know? Like, it's like, yeah. Oh, I didn't get to go. It's like, yeah, there was a couple of reasons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you had a ticket and everything. Oh, bugger. That sucks. Yeah. I just, yeah. It's one of those things. If I go, I have normally gone for work. And this time there was no work. And I was like, shit. Oh, well. So next year, I'm just going to say fuck it and go for fun.
Sure.
Good idea.
So you should book your hotel now.
Now, yeah, basically. And not use Airbnb like I have in the past because...
No, because they'll cancel at any moment. And drive instead of catching a plane because I did see everyone got stuck in Melbourne because all the flights got cancelled.
Oh, the ones coming back into Sydney.
Yeah.
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 Yes.
That's another reason to fly Jetstar.
Yeah. My experience of this last week has been one that, thankfully to you, Dion, has resulted in a number of wonderful memes. That our initial start of watching Joker Folie à Deux. are we ever going to review that? No.
Oh, it's out now. It's a heap of shit. Don't bother.
There you go. There's the review.
I mean, it was great when people came out trying to incorporate and explain how it's actually like a meta narrative about the fan base and being toxic and you don't like all that kind of stuff and trying to make it work. And Todd Phillips came in and were like, no, that wasn't what it was about at all. We just wanted to tell this story. And everyone's like, if you just shut up and let the fans defend you, people might have taken it a bit. Yeah, but no, the Joker 2 is terrible. Which has led us into what I think you're talking about, Quinny.
Yes.
Like, who will win the Razzie of 2024?
This year's biggest films have been a fucking race to the bottom. Gigantic films that have lost money hand over fist, and some of the biggest things that people have been waiting for have just sucked. And one of those, I can now say, thanks to my good friend Noel, who was in Sydney visiting from down in Tassie, is Megalopolis. Fuck that movie and all who sail in her.
Megaflopolis?
Oh, I wish it was that clever, Jill. It's just the most astonishingly terrible film I have watched. The memes I was talking about is, you know, Madam Web handing over the sword for worst movie of 2024 to Joker 2, and then Megalopolis standing behind Joker 2 going, it's about my time, buddy. Going to tap you on the shoulder for that one.
What is it about?
No.
You saw it and you're still like, I don't fucking know.
Like, it is a movie about Adam Driver, who is called Cesar Romero or Cesar something.
Cesar Romero was the Joker from the 1960s Batman.
So there's a Cesar. Hang on, look.
But he looks like he's Al Pacino.
He wants to be. I thought it was on purpose. No.
Oh, like, okay.
I don't know that anything's on purpose here. Cesar Catalina.
Name. Why are you doing Al Pacino cosplay in this movie?
Because everybody, like, all reports are that this was a film that was done mostly through improv. A lot of people just kind of going, yeah, we had a script and then we just fucked around on the day and shot for hours and this is whatever they fucking pulled out of it. So Adam Driver is Cesar Catalina, who's a futuristic architect who is part of this chairman of the design authority, that they're in a place called New Rome, which is clearly New York. And for no particularly good reason, he has the ability to stop time. Never explained. Doesn't really make sense. Loses it at some point, comes back at another. And he is kind of going up against Giancarlo Esposito, who's Franklin Cicero, the mayor of New Rome. He's banging the mayor's daughter. Aubrey Plaza is a character called Wow Platinum.
What?
Her name is Wow Platinum, which is a name that was clearly written by an old man. She's the only thing that's even vaguely watchable about the film. Shia LaBeouf is in there. His eyebrows are not. Somebody removed those, so he's just doing the acting with the rest of his face. It's the single most punchable character I've ever seen committed to screen. He's Caesar's cousin who's jealous and is having weird incestuous sex with some cousins or sisters or something. Lawrence Fishburne is occasionally there. John Voight is there as a doddering, idiotic fucking old congressman who has backed the wrong horse, which is pretty much John Voight. It's just Dustin Hoffman shows up at one point. Nobody knows why. At some point in the movie, like somewhere around the middle, the movie stopped, the lights came up, and I was like, oh, fuck, is this an intermission? Because it was very clearly not the... And then a little, like, on the big screen, right down the bottom, a little screen appeared. And then Adam Driver responded to a question that nobody had asked for 5 minutes. And then the lights went back down and the film continued. And everyone went, what the fuck's going on? it's just a wank of titanic proportions. And it's almost the kind of thing that could become a cult thing later, where people will, you know, scream at the audience will scream at the screen, you know, when certain lines happen.
You.
Oh, like a bit like The Room.
Yeah, I could imagine it being like The Room one day, apart from the fact that it's too fucking long and it's utterly incomprehensible.
Has Christensen got dementia?
It's Coppola, but no.
Oh, Coppola. Oh.
Yeah, I don't think so. Apparently, there were lots of reports on set of him trying to kiss the extras and stuff. He's gotten into his old creepy, doesn't know how to make a film phase. There's a sequence where there's a Vestal Virgin who comes in, sings a song whilst hanging on a something in the sky. Everybody's like, ooh, ah. And then she turns into six of herself and everybody's like, oh, she's the most amazing virgin who will save our city. And then two scenes later, it's revealed that, oh, she's not a virgin at all. She's actually 23. And that plot line stops at that moment and nobody ever talks about it again. And it's almost Zen filmmaking in the same way that the Rollerblade 7 is Zen filmmaking. It's just turn up, throw money at it, see what happens.
Sounds like this film was written by Elon Musk.
Yes, I would actually imagine that.
Or written by ChatGPT.
I think ChatGPT actually would have done a better job. Like, characters walk in and then just start doing a monologue from Shakespeare for no reason. Stop.
I'm just excited by the fact that we still haven't seen Craven. And one that I'd totally forgotten about, Gladiator 2. Because, you know, Ridley Scott has not done his best work in the last couple of years. And I'm kind of going, I wonder what Gladiator 2 is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to know.
The lesson is 2024 is not over yet.
Like, we've got Venom 3 just waiting.
Oh yeah,
yes, Venom 3. The Last Dance. Can't
wait. It's just hanging there, getting ready to pounce. Yeah. But then,
with a secondary title of The Last Dance, you know it's going to be top tier.
Adsky, I won't hear anything attacked about Wicked. Come on, like, we know what we're getting into. That is like a proper musical film. Whereas The Joker Part 2, Cage de Folies, whatever, that was not expected. Like, you know, when you go to see Wicked, you know the songs. You know,
yeah,
it would only be, you know, confronting if it just turned up and there were no songs in Wicked, and it was actually like someone fell into a coma in an office and then had that dream and then woke up and went, oh, better get back to my spreadsheets. Like, that's how Wicked could be worse.
The other amazing thing I heard about Joker 2 is that, like, they actually filmed three endings to it. Two of which were interesting, and we got the ones that wasn't.
Oh, no.
Great. Hey, speaking of The Office, are we all excited for the Australian version of The Office?
No.
What a year.
Had even tried to make the set look completely different, then maybe I would give it a go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is a straight copy-paste.
I mean, I also want to point out that the Office is not just like, we're not just getting a shit version of the American one in that sense, like, because you can go out there and find like Guatemalan The Office and a bunch of other ones like that. Go right ahead. Look into these franchise things. Like, you know,
I think
Turkish Friends.
Anything along the lines of that kind of comedy, but Australian, just rewatch Kath and Kim.
Or even Utopia, or, you know, like, there, if you want that, like, absolutely, Kath and Kim is, you know, cringe comedy at its best.
Yeah.
If you want the Office vibe, like, in an actual office where people do dumb shit, that, I'm not trying to shit on you, Kath and Kim. I was just going to say that, like, Utopia has that whole kind of office thing. But, Yes. Yeah. Looks terrible. While we're on the subject of Australian things that I didn't realise were a thing, did you know that they've made a film based on the Paul Kelly song How to Make Gravy?
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean...
So it's going to be depressing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's
I don't know.
No? Have you looked at the trailer, Dave?
No, I haven't. I just heard that, this is the first I heard of it, and my immediate thought was like, oh, why? But also, I still enjoy the song. I mean, you know, it's no Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, but it is highly established as part of the Australian playlist for Christmas. So,
oh, look, I love the song. I'm just not entirely sure that I would have gone, you know what, we need 90 minutes to tell this story. But yeah. Hey, Stan has the money. They're doing their first Australian feature film, I believe.
Great. First. That should be part of the thing, like more Australian content on Australian streaming platforms. Yes. Yeah. Support your local streaming platform, like Stan.
Yes.
I'm down
100%.
Yeah. Look, all right. Speaking of local streaming content, what are we seeing next week? Which should have been this week?
Another film from the cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Super Slash Man. Or
Super Man.
Super yeah.
Christopher Reeve's story.
Yes.
Which I am very excited about.
Yeah.
I've always had a real love and respect of Christopher Reeve. And, you know, obviously Superman, but also, you know, seeing him in all of the other roles that he's played over the years and going, yeah, he was actually just a shit hot actor. He was really good.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll talk about that one next week. As we roll towards the Halloween show. Yes, yes, Halloween. But I mean, charcuterie. It's just a bunch of trailers and then we talk about stuff. And I don't know. By then, isn't Agatha All Along going to be wrapped up?
Yes.
Any other spooky stuff? Beetlejuice, we haven't talked about yet, but we'll get to Beetlejuice.
Definitely
Beetlejuice.
Be covering.
And plus a bunch of other things. Anything else that is that we haven't talked about, like that is coming up to give people an opportunity so they can watch it? There you go.
Smile 2. Yes.
I'm going to see that Smile 2 tomorrow.
I only just finished watching Smile 1 today. Because I was like, oh, if I'm going to go see a sequel, I'd better go and watch that first one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to let you in a little secret there, Quinny. I won't have watched Smile before going to see Smile 2, and I'm going to sit next to you in the cinema, and I'm going to ask questions like, why are they smiling?
What are they smiling about? This is really scary.
Who's that guy?
The great thing about that is that I do believe that Smile 2 is almost entirely unrelated to the initial film. I mean, obviously the concept of the thing that is smiley and scary, but no continuing characters or anything like that. So it's not like you're going to go, who's that dude? Because I'll go, I don't fucking know.
Ooh, a couple of bits from the chat.
Asky can go and see Terrifier 3. I will pass. Yeah. I don't like clowns and I fucking hate Christmas. So Santa clowns are a big no.
Yeah, murder Santa clown, not going to happen for Jill. Also, I'm not particularly I don't want to get down that road either. I'm with you, Jill. I'm like, yeah, I don't need that in my life.
No, I will say, however, shout out to Terrifier 3 for beating Joker Folliadu at the box office.
Wow.
Yep. The battle of the evil clowns has been won by the cheap one with no budget.
And as Karina has just pointed out also in the chat, is that Samara Weaving is going to be reprising her role from Ready or Not as it's getting a sequel. And it better be called Here I Come.
Yes, it better.
With no explanation, nothing in front of it going Ready or Not Part 2. It should just say Here I Come, and it's just her with an axe. That's all I need. Do it. Come on, Alan.
I agree 100%. I love it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Your audience, like your audience is smart. They will get the reference.
Yes. They're smart and they're clever and they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So we've got a whole bunch of scary stuff between now and the end of the month. But if there's anything else that you think we should be looking at in our show spookery or whatever, let us know.
show spookery. You
know, I don't know. It's just charcuterie. It's a fucking spookery. Sure. I don't know.
It's a clip show.
Yeah, it's a clip show.
Yeah. We just slice together old clips from previous shows and chuck them out again.
You know? Oh, God. Sorry. That's amazing. So Terrifier 3 or whatever had a $2 million budget and made like $51 million or something in its opening weekend. And Joker 2 has a budget of like $200 million for the film plus another hundred and something million for the budget, for the marketing budget. And it is looking like being possibly one of the biggest flops in the last 10 years. Yeah. And also on par, unfortunately,
fault that logic.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a flop on par with the Marvels, which is shit because that was a much better film.
Yeah.
Like infinitely better.
The musical bit in the Marvels is better than all the musical bits in Joker 2.
3,000,000%. Yeah. And the one thing I really want to do, I want to get in touch with my friend Paul, who runs the IMAX here, and say, so are we getting rid of some of the screenings of Joker 2? Because for a week and a bit following the release, nothing else was screening in the IMAX.
Oh, God.
And I'm pretty sure that's a horse that they're going to regret backing, because all I really want to do is go back and watch Transformers 1 again.
Yeah. Hopefully that got some love. That's a good film.
Yes. Yes, it was, and continues to be.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We've got a pretty busy month. Don't forget, if you've got a couple of bucks, buy us a coffee. Or shoot us a thing for a Ko-Fi. Send us an email. Message us on socials. If you haven't joined already the Periodic Table Facebook groups, what is there? There's like the nerd thread for everything else. There's the Star Wars group. There's the Marvel group. There's a bunch of other groups. Join in. We post a lot of memes.
We do. We also occasionally post up-to-date news about what's going on in the world of entertainment. And I say we, I usually mean that's Will.
Yes.
Will, yeah, that's true.
Will, Michael Schutter, and a couple of others are up at fucking all hours of the night, apparently, just scouring the news threads for when they could post the first trailer or whatever. And we love them for it.
Yeah, because we just, I just post.
Hey, that's a lot of work.
I just post memes and GIFs. Yeah, that one's for Peter. Because she's not here. She'll be back for 2 weeks. Memes and GIFs for Pete.
Yes.
I'm really happy Pete won't watch this episode. Like, that's not a film for her. But the content is 100% up her alley. I feel like she should read the thing. But anyway, I don't know.
I have a friend that really can't watch horror movies but read the whole plot and outline of The Substance and was like, oh yeah, no, that was a great movie. I was like, she'll never watch it.
Yeah.
But got what she needed to out of it.
Exactly. And hopefully the discussion that we had in the podcast, if people want to go back and listen to it, isn't too spoilery, because we didn't actually talk too much about spoilers. We talked more about the impact.
Too deep in spoilers, yeah.
No, I think you'd be pretty safe with that one.
And thanks everyone in the chat.
Yeah.
Turning up.
We have thoroughly enjoyed having you all here, and also welcome to Patch Does, who has joined us and is a newbie to our chat this evening. We love having you here. In fact, all of the... Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll see you all later.
Good night, everybody. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up. Don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up.
For listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.